Welcome back to Space Castle. That is your clubhouse and ours for all things nerdy. My name is DT.
And I'm Seth.
And Alex died.
I'm working on a Goldblum-esque robot version of him. So he'll be back soon.
Fantastic. Can we make him fight? Can we have like robot wars, like battle bots?
Absolutely not, you sadistic fuck.
Why the fuck not?
They're our friends.
Well, one of them is, and the other one's Alex. I kid. What if we can make it like Rock'em Sock'em robots? Like one of us can control one of them. And just see
that might
be
interesting.
Right? Yeah. Okay. And we can bet money on it.
I don't know if either of them would be cool with like not being in control of their bodies.
Well, Alex is Catholic, so he's used to it.
Oh shit. Oh,
I might
shit.
Be editing that part out.
How about this? What if you and I, we each team up with a robot friend? So you'll get Goldblum, I'll get Alex. And
okay.
Then together, we will build like fighting robots to fight with.
Okay. So now we're talking like human/robot pit crews and building fighting robots.
Yeah. And then I'll build a BattleBots arena in one of the floors on Space Castle.
Perfect.
And we'll be good, dude.
I love this idea.
Cause I don't like sentience fighting, man. If we're going to fight, it's gotta be non-sentient robots, you know?
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
Okay. I'll get to work.
Perfect.
We'll do it after this episode.
Yeah. We don't want to end the episode early. Let's do the full episode and then we'll start building fighting robots.
Cool.
Perfect.
This is a podcast. It's your clubhouse and ours for all things nerdy, if you haven't gathered that by now. I don't know how to do the intros. I'm tired.
I got the intro. I can handle this. Rely on me. I got you, boo. So I got up this morning. And being a 38-year-old man, I poured myself a bowl of Trix cereal, sat on the couch with my PJs, and I finished for the very first time due to technical errors and issues on previous attempts. For the first time ever, I finished the complete run of Steven Universe, the cartoon that ran on Cartoon Network from 2013 to 2019, I believe. I made an attempt back in 2019 after the series had wrapped up to watch the full series, but I watched it on Hulu. And for whatever weird fucking reason, Hulu didn't have the rights to have all five complete seasons on there. So there were big gaps. And eventually I just gave up because I was missing so much. And I didn't want to look up what was happening in the episodes that I wasn't able to see. So I kind of set it aside and kind of forgot about it for a couple of years. But the full series, the subsequent TV movie, and the subsequent short run series that came after that are all on HBO Max. So I stumbled across it while I was looking for something to watch. And I was like, fuck, I remember that show being great, but I wasn't able to finish it. Let me go back and wrap this up. Let me start over from the beginning, like tear through it and just kind of check that off my bucket list, so to speak. And the result is a show I absolutely fucking fell in love with and I thoroughly fucking enjoyed. And I'm still right now still moved by the finale that I just watched like maybe 2 hours ago. So I was thinking we could talk about that because I know a lot of nerds really dug that show.
Yeah.
And now I am among you.
Yeah, you will not find contradictory opinions in me, man. I am a Steven Universe stan for sure.
Are we about to agree on something?
Yeah, dude, we agree. You know what I've noticed? We tend to agree on like the properly important things, like Avatar, Steven Universe, French Dispatch. We agree on like important stuff. We debate
the culturally
on the things,
significant stuff that's actually doesn't get the attention it deserves.
That one for sure. We tend to agree on things that should be agreed on and disagree on things that are fine. Like we disagree on Star Wars, and that's fine because Star Wars is a very ambiguous sort of IP. It has a lot on both sides. Things like Steven Universe, like you're either in love with it or you're incorrect. Like you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Star
man.
Wars is more ambiguous than that. So like it's fine that we don't agree on Star Wars stuff, but I'm glad that we agree on Steven Universe because just what a purely wonderful experience it is. It's just nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. Created by Rebecca Sugar for Cartoon Network. By the way, I wish I was 38 years old. She's 34. I wish I had a successful cartoon series that's well-beloved by everybody who's watched it. and was still making residual money from said series, that'd be really nice.
I wish I was friends with Rebecca Sugar.
She seems like a sweetheart. let me rephrase that. Let me say they seem like a sweetheart. She is she's non-binary, which is cool.
I did not know that.
Yeah, but like I said before, the show ran from 2013 to 2019 on Cartoon Network. It's got 5 seasons. Each season, it ranges from anywhere from like 20 to like 50 episodes, I think. Like, there's a lot of fucking episodes. But they're all in vignette style, so it's very serialized, and they're only like 11 to 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
There's a couple of episodes that are a full half hour because there's a lot of shit they had to pack into it. A lot of significant things happen. But for being 5 seasons long and having that many episodes, it goes by very briskly. But there is a wonderful amount of music and humor and lore and history in the series that you can just dive into. It's great.
That's what's really surprising me. I mean, it fits the mold of a Cartoon Network show, right? It's like, can be easily serialized. You think like something like Teen Titans, which also had a handful of seasons, fit the same sort of episodic nature, but had a few longer episodes or part 2, part 3 kind of episodes, right? Same as Steven Universe, but look at the character building and world building and storytelling that Steven Universe did compared to Teen Titans. Teen Titans didn't go anywhere. It didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. It's incredible the amount of effort and
growth,
thoughtfulness and growth that went into Steven Universe in just 5 short episode seasons. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. So for anybody who hasn't seen the series, and you absolutely should, it is about a young boy who is being raised by 3 aliens from another planet. They're mineral-based, and their entire essence of their being is contained within these small gems. Their physical bodies are like manifestations of energy and light, and that's how they move about, that's how they interact, that's how they, you know, project their personalities, and that's how we know them. And we come to learn that Steven is actually the offspring of one of these beings and his human father. They call themselves the Crystal Gems. His crystal gem of a mom fell in love with his human father. They decided to have a child. And as a result, his mom no longer exists because she put all of her essence of her being into creating him. So the show deals with his sense of identity because he's torn between 2 worlds, the human world and being like this zany, silly 13, 14-year-old kid, and also being this kid who has sort of inherited all of the choices and the battles and the wars and the culture of his mother. And him trying to come to terms with whether or not he wants to just be a normal 14-year-old kid or if he wants to inherit this grand galactic destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And it's told in such a small, intimate way, but it's also told in like this big, grand scale too. It's incredibly well-balanced and well-written in the sense that everything largely takes place on Earth. They do travel off-world, spoiler alert, and there's this huge, grand sort of backdrop of like this thousands of years long war that took place a long time ago for the battle for Earth. The effect it had on the planet, the effect it had on the characters who survived. And also Steven just wanted to be like a kid and like wanted to eat like ice cream sandwiches and play like GameCube and shit.
The show progresses in a way that is like frankly genius.
It is.
It's like savant level phenomenal progression. It's perfect. Like first, just to show a little bit of scale here, right? The first episode is Steven Universe being upset because his favorite ice cream sandwich company went out of business.
Yeah, Cookie Cat.
Cookie Cat. He can't get his favorite ice cream sandwiches anymore. A flash forward to like 3.5-4 seasons later, and he's like literally battling for not only the fate of the planet, but also finishing a centuries-long galactic-wide war that his mother started. The scale is so varied. But with every episode, you get a little deeper, a little more. You do not know anything of this galaxy-wide historical war and, frankly, the darkness that it has placed on everybody that Steven knows. You know nothing about that for the first handful of episodes or so of the series because it's just this kid who's got kid problems. It's great.
The first season actually is very sort of lighthearted and you only get little tiny bits of and pieces of lore.
Yeah.
And it's not really until season 2 takes off where things really open up wide. And it's funny because like you said before, like the first season feels like your typical run of the mill Cartoon Network show. You got zany aliens that can shapeshift and there's music involved. And like Steven's like kind of like this borderline obnoxious character, even though he's got a heart of gold and he's very sweet. And it just feels like, you know, this could be serialized forever. You can do like 12 seasons of the show and just have it be inconsequential.
Mm-hmm.
And then season two picks up and it really starts exploring the lore and the history of the Crystal Gems and the war and their planet. And it keeps building and building and building. And as the world widens and we explore more of what's actually happened and what's happening, there's character growth for every one of the characters. And that character growth is so fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
And so subtle that at one point in one of the later seasons, one of the Crystal Gems, Garnet, who happens to be my favorite, she's having a conversation with Steven and she's like, you've really grown up. Like, it's gotten to the point where you don't need me anymore. And you think about that as you're watching the show and it's like, Steven is still portrayed as like this precocious, silly, plays his fucking ukulele, walks around sandals all the time kid. And it's not until you stop and think about the fact that, holy shit, like, they tricked us as the audience too and not realizing that Steven has actually grown up and he's become a leader of these people.
He truly has.
Yeah, he's not just this goofy 14-year-old kid like he was initially, because the show still presents him as that, but the character growth is so subtle and so nuanced that it's like, holy shit, he is now the full culmination of being that goofy 14-year-old and also like this galactic fucking leader. Like, it's, how the fuck did you do that, Rebecca Sugar? Like, how did you do that?
The entire show run is a masterclass in how to deal with keeping your own innocence and hopefulness and positive outlook amidst the absolute horseshit of a world that you've been given.
And goddamn, if that's not a relevant and important message.
I know.
Especially right now.
It's like, so strong and it's so well done. It sticks with me so much. Like, I think about episodes of Steven Universe to this day, years after the fact that I've seen them. I think about it constantly because Steven is like, on the surface, is like a typical, like, happy-go-lucky kid in a kid's cartoon show, right? But
yeah.
That surface is paper thin. Like, it takes no effort to look a little deeper, to see a little bit more, and to see that, like, he's just fucking trying his best to, like, clean off the bullshit and, like, be the best version of himself and leave the world a little bit better than he found it. The brilliance of Steven Universe is that it's written and shown in a way that it makes it very easy for you as an audience member to apply that hope to your own life.
Yeah. Yes. Every single one of their characters is like that too. You've got Steven, who's that goofy 14-year-old kid who's literally carrying the weight of the galaxy on his shoulders. You've got Garnet, who is not only dealing with gender and personal identity issues all the time, she's also underneath her cool and calm exterior dealing with the tragedy that she's befallen and having to be the de facto leader of these people, the, like, the last surviving members of their sort of, not race, but like section of their race that rebelled.
Faction.
There you go. You've got Pearl, who is designed to be like this calculating sort of almost like C-3PO type character, who under the surface is very emotional because she was at the emotional heart of all the things that transpired in the war prior.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got Amethyst, who is just like kind of plucky, sort of like don't give a shit, like rumble tumble, like tomboy type character, who is dealing with the fact that she's deficient. She was born wrong. And she has to come to terms with the idea that no, she's not. She's perfect exactly the fucking way she is.
Yeah, exactly. For a little bit of context, Amethyst was part of a seed race that was there to like be super soldier, basically.
Like a homegrown army.
Yeah, that they planted on Earth to be the like terraforming army that takes over and controls the Earth. And she was like left behind because she didn't grow the exact same as everybody else. So like she was basically rejected from that plot for being, you know, quote, deficient.
And defective, yeah.
Yeah. Man, the show is so fucking mature in so many things. Like even Peridot and Lapis Lazuli. Lapis is such a cool character. Like everybody deals with so much stuff in this show and they deal with it in such a mature and thoughtful way that like it never feels cheap. It never feels
pandering.
Yeah, there's no pandering whatsoever in this entire show.
Yeah.
And that's impossible in a kid's show. Like I cannot believe that they've pulled that off however they did it. Even characters like Connie is just a regular human girl who like falls for Steven. Like they are friends. And then as friends tend to do when they're growing up and they grow through a lot of stuff, like they end up like very, very close and falling in love, spoiler alert. But Connie's just like a regular girl who has like glasses problems and like her mom is overbearing and like none of it is ever short. There's no like, oh, she's just the girl. It's like, oh, Connie is the best of us. Like,
yeah.
Man, it's so good. I love this show so deeply. And I know a handful of people that are like, oh, it's just a kid's show. Like, I'm not really into that. It's like, yeah, it kind of is. But you really need to give it a chance. Like, for real, you gotta watch it. It deals with so many heavy things. And for me, a lot of my, not problems, but a lot of the stuff that I wrestle with internally is very, like, identity-based. It's very... like, what does this mean? Who am I? What am I doing? What is the point of this? What, like, what the fuck is the point? And Steven Universe is like, yeah, I'm going to make a show about that. Yeah. You should watch it.
Yeah.
So I identify really, really deeply with most of the characters and most of the plots and most of the issues in this show. It's so good. And I feel that most people can identify very deeply with the show, which is why everybody needs to see it. Plus, we haven't even touched on this yet, but this show is like a musical show. There's songs, original songs in just about every episode, and fucking every one of them is a banger, dude. Like, they're all amazing. I sing along with so many of these songs. I have Spotify playlists. They're all so good. The music is so fucking good in the show.
Yeah, Rebecca Sugar is a great musician. But yeah, the music is one of the many hearts of the show, and it's all very well written and very melodic and very well crafted. And like, everybody in the cast is not only like a fucking phenomenal fucking like voice actor, they can all like sing and belt. We should talk about the cast at some point, but once we're talking about the music, because the music is just phenomenal and it works so well to just help tell the story. And there are some episodes that are almost straight up just musical episodes. There's the episode where Steven's dad, Steven and Pearl go on vacation. They all feel like they need a break. Steven's dad has just, spoiler alert, won the lottery, and they go and they spend a whole bunch of fucking money in this world's equivalent of New York City. And the episode is Steven's dad and Pearl coming to terms with each other because they never found personal footing as both friends and sort of co-parents who were trying to raise this kid because they were both in love with Steven's mom.
Mm-hmm.
Steven's mom is gone. They both have this empty void and this sort of resentment because they both wanted more time with her and the other person was always vying for time as well. They had sort of a rivalry. And that rivalry, they come to discover, developed into a mutual grief they didn't know how to process. So they resented each other. They didn't realize, as many people do, that when you both love and care for somebody, when that person's gone, you can find that love again with that person who loved them too, because you have so much in common. The show is just fucking beautiful when it comes to dealing with relationships and
yeah,
just what it means to be a family, what it means to be in love with somebody, what it means when that love is gone. It's really fucking striking. It's terribly fucking deep and existential for what on the surface looks like a zany bubblegum kid show. It's crazy.
It's a masterclass in how to deal with grief too, all kinds. It handles it so well. And there's all kinds of grief on display. You've got obviously like grief with Rose, her being gone and like what that means for like people who loved her and now she's gone, but also grief of like Garnet, for example. A little bit of a spoiler alert here if you haven't seen the show. Garnet is two gems together. They are in love and their love has binded them so closely that they have fused into another being named Garnet, which is a fusion of the two. So fusions are like a thing in the show that's super awesome, where two gemstones can combine their powers into like become another being with a whole bunch of other powers and stuff, which is super rad. But Garnet is just a character on the show, and we learn later that Garnet is a fusion of two other gems, Ruby and Sapphire, which is how you make a Garnet. Anyways, it's great, clever, but they've been a fusion this whole time. And what's really, really cool is you get a display of grief of like the loss of societal status because they were kind of outcast for being in love, because Ruby is in this gemstone caste system. Ruby is kind of like a lower caste.
Like a guard, basically.
Yeah, and Sapphire is like a princess. So it was very much like a forbidden love sort of situation, but they loved each other anyways. And you get the grief of their loss of status, of their loss of friends, of their loss of like everything that they know, because this love is like more important than the rest of their situation. So you get that kind of grief. You get the kind of grief where like Amethyst is grieving the loss of her entire purpose. Honestly, it's like every shade of grief is on display, and you can pick out an episode or a handful of episodes or a season. And it's like, okay, if you're dealing with this kind of grief, watch these episodes, because this is a fairly healthy way to deal with this kind of grief.
Absolutely.
The entire show is like, might as well be Steven Universe : healthy coping mechanisms for blank. Like, it's so good.
I wonder if they had a lot of research done for the show in terms of like having like psychologists and therapists involved helping them craft the stories, because they're so spot on when it comes to, like you said, dealing with grief, dealing with gender identity, dealing with the fact that Garnet is viewed as being an abomination. Like, the relationship between the two characters that forms Garnet is viewed as being an abomination,
mm-hmm.
which is a very close parallel for gays and lesbians. Just the fact that their society viewed their love, which is pure and honest and wonderful and makes them both stronger and acts as like a pillar of support for everybody around them, is viewed as being fundamentally evil because it goes against their beliefs.
Yeah.
Like, holy fuck. Like, that's profound too.
That's a hell of a topic to tackle in a kid's show.
Right? And it does it just matter-of-factly. Like, here are two characters. They're both women. They're in love. They've formed such a strong bond that they've become one like unit. And as such, they're a pillar of their community, and everybody looks at them for strength, love, and guidance. Like, and the show doesn't say like, hey, gays are okay. It's just like, here's these two characters that are in love, and they're wonderful and they're fantastic.
Which is how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
They're leaders. Like, their sexuality has literally nothing to do with it, which is correct.
Exactly.
It does have a lot to do with the situation that they're in and a lot of the issues that they have to deal with, because the society they came from thinks that it's a problem. But Steven Universe as a show doesn't, as it should be. It's great. I don't want to dwell too long on how fucking wonderful it is and how compassionate the show is, because I use Steven Universe often as one of my mental compasses for like how to deal with situations compassionately. And Rebecca Sugar, like, they fucking absolutely killed it. And their writing on Adventure Time is much the same.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're like a genius. I don't know if they have psychology PhDs. I don't know. But they fucking nailed it on this. Their writing is so good and so compassionate and thoughtful that like I use it as a gauge for my own levels of compassion sometimes.
Yeah.
But at risk of making the entire episode about this one little section, I want to talk about the cast.
Yes. Yeah.
The Steven Universe voice actor, Steven's voice actor, Zach
Callison,
has dealt with some pretty hefty shit through the run of this show, and like almost like couldn't come back for future or anything like that. Like he was dealing with, I don't know exactly, because I haven't looked it up, but I believe he was dealing with both some really severe depression and an alcohol problem, probably because of the depression, or maybe in conjunction with. But what I find is very interesting is that he has spoken, I believe at a Comic-Con, that he also used the character of Steven to help him cope with his own depression.
Sure.
Which is fascinating to play a character yourself and still like learn and use that character to help yourself. Like it's got a weird sort of Mobius strip vibe to me. From what I understand, he's doing a lot better now, which is great. Awesome. Thank God for that. I say thank God as a figure of speech, but like,
yeah,
I don't
whatever
believe
you
God.
Believe in.
Yeah. Like, I don't believe in God, but I use it as a figure of speech. You know what? I played too much D&D. Like, just thank Ogma. Thank Ogma for that. And I'm glad to hear at least that he's doing better. I don't know if that's true. I think it is. I don't know why people would say that he's doing better if he's not. But anyways, Steven's voice actor also dealt with a lot of like the same sort of depression that we see dealt with in the show. And I think that that's incredibly fascinating.
Yeah. It's amazing that the show is able to actually act as like a coping mechanism and a tool for him to grow as a person and sort through his own stuff. I think the show has the power to do that. I think the show is fucking transcendent. And I think his performance as Steven Universe is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
The kid can sing. He can voice act. The nuance when dealing with the emotions and everything that Steven's dealing with all at once is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the cast too, like the rest of the cast, you've got Dee Dee Magno-Hall as Pearl, who I think has probably the most thankless job playing Pearl, who, like I said before, is sort of like this being who's created to be a servant, be like a font of information and essentially be like a C-3PO for higher class gems on their home world. And beneath that surface, she's got such a tragic story because of what she's been asked to do and what she's been what she's had to do and had to hold secret and just hold silent for years. And everything she knows about Steven and his history and having to help raise this kid without being able to help him discover who he is and having to watch him sort through it and discover it for himself. And it comes through in the voice acting, and it's very tragic, but also beautiful at the same time.
The voice cast is spectacular.
Yeah, Michaela Dietz, who plays Amethyst, who plays it as like this rough and tumble sort of don't give a shit character who's actually got massive identity and personal issues she's dealing with. And the tragedy underlying the surface of that character comes through just masterfully. And my favorite character, Garnet, is played by Estelle, who you might know as a pop star currently. I think one of her biggest hits was American Boy, where she did that duet with Kanye West some years back. She's got a great fucking catalog of music, and she really shines here, no pun intended, as both a voice actress and a singer. She gets a lot of opportunities in some of the best songs in the series, and she's just fucking awesome. It's the heart of this sort of team, so to speak. Everybody in this show is great. They're all firing on all cylinders. Hats off to the fucking casting director and the voice directors who help the actors develop these characters and figure out who they are and who they will become, because it's all done so masterfully and so beautifully and seamlessly. It's really fucking great.
Yeah, even the side characters. The side characters are never treated like side characters.
There's no token characters here. Even the mayor, who's like, you assume is like this slapsticky sort of throwaway background character, he has growth too. Like,
yeah.
Why? There's no need for it, but it's done because every single character is treated with respect here.
It's done because that is the right thing to do. I feel like that is kind of a through line for this whole show, is like whenever there's a decision to be made, they always seem to just make the right one, regardless of how much effort it will take.
Yeah.
Which is great. What a absolute joy it is. And like it shines through that, like all the side characters are so good. That's why I mean, Connie's not really a side character, but she started as a side character and she's a fan favorite for a good reason.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also like, just every time she's on screen, it's better. Same with fucking Tom Sharpling's character, Mr. Universe, Greg, Steven's dad. Every time he's on screen, it's like, God, dude, this character is great. And then Peridot, and then Lapis Lazuli, and Mayor Dewey, Mr. Smiley, like Lars. Every character that's on screen is like,
Lars,
dude,
man.
Lars is great. Every fucking character awesome that's on character. Screen is like, oh yeah, I love every character in this show. There is nobody in this show that's not excellent. God, what a good one, man.
Thankfully, we're far from the only people who recognize and appreciate what the show accomplished. It won a GLAAD Media Award for Outstanding Kids and Family Programming. It's been nominated and won Emmys and Annie Awards. It won a Peabody, which is massive.
Yeah.
The show is very critically acclaimed and, as far as I know, universally loved by everybody who's taken the time to actually jump into it and watch it to completion.
Yeah, I don't know anybody that's disliked it, and I haven't really heard of anybody that's disliked it. I mean, I'm positive that there are. Right? Because people like to see beautiful things burn.
Yeah, but they can shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Right.
The show is wonderful, and I'm really excited to get into Steven Universe Future and the movie, which I have seen neither, but I've also heard very good things about both of those things.
Mm-hmm. I might do that today, actually. It's Saturday. I got nothing much else going on, so I might just jump in and watch the movie and start going on Steven Universe Future as well.
I need to go to my workshop and sand a bunch of Dice Masters I got to ship off to the Netherlands. So maybe I'll put that on while I sand. That might be a good, yeah.
Treat it with more respect than background noise, but it would definitely be good noise to work to for sure.
It's very good background if you've already seen the series once or twice.
Fair.
It has the same sort of vibe as like Futurama.
Yeah.
In that, like, once you've gone through the story once, you can kind of just put it on and, like, whenever you're doing a thing and you, like, look up at the screen, you're just like, oh, yeah, I love this song. And it's like, it just brightens up your day. You're like, oh, yeah, fucking Slurm is hilarious. That's a good inside joke. I get it. Like, it's got the same sort of Futurama vibe. You're like, you can just put it on in a fucking show playlist on Netflix or whatever network it's on now, and just, like, vibe. It's great.
It's fucking great.
I want to talk very briefly about Rebecca Sugar's connection between Adventure Time and Steven Universe, and how whatever they do in the future, I'm going to watch, because I loved Adventure Time and I love Steven Universe, obviously. And there's one linchpin between both of those, and that's Rebecca Sugar. And they have absolutely won me over. Like, whatever they end up doing is going to be great, and I'm here for it. And, like, they have other work, right? I remember they did, I think, the theme song for OKKO, which is apparently another wonderful show that I haven't watched.
I think their husband created OKKO. Ian Jones Cordy. Yeah. I think he created that show. They work a lot together, obviously, being, you know, a married couple.
Yeah. So. It's great. Whatever they do next, man, I'm in. Like, I'm between, like, literally just Adventure Time and Steven Universe, I'm in for whatever. Like, they're going to do well.
The two of them are fucking dynamos. They rule. They're awesome.
Rebecca Sugar is apparently golden, I guess.
She's got that Midas touch.
they kill it. Honestly, I'm glad that they get the recognition too. Not just from, like, people like us, but from, like, the people who make the money decisions.
Right.
Studios recognize that Rebecca Sugar knows what they're doing. So they get, like, from what I understand, a uncommon amount of time to work on episodes. Like, same with Mythbusters. The networks recognize the quality, and that is advantageous, and give them the space and time to work on things properly, which is so huge.
Not common enough in the industry.
Not common at all. I'm glad that they're getting recognition, not just from us, but from the people who write the checks.
Yeah. Go watch Steven Universe. It's fucking incredible. You can watch the entire series and a subsequent project afterwards on HBO Max.
Yep. And then pop the soundtrack into Spotify and fucking jam out. So good.
And there, wow, he must have a vested interest in this show, because he let us finish.
I've been tweaking a little bit of his settings, and he's kind of, yeah, he's been getting better.
Thank you, Goldblum, you sweetheart.
Absolute joy. I got dibs on him for my robot fighting team. I got dibs on Goldblum.
All right, I'll take Alex. Fine. If I have to. But as always, Goldblum is letting us know that we have messages from Earth we've got to get to, and then we're going to come right back with Deep Space Recon and a really fun listener question.
Yeah, let's do it.
Hey, it's Misty and Liz with Talking Shitisher.
We're sisters who don't know shit about literature, but we love to hang out and talk about the books we've read.
You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Talking Shitisher and on Twitter at Talk Shitisher.
And look for us wherever you listen to podcasts.
As always, those are some great messages from Earth. And now it's sexy time. There's only two of us. So I guess the only option is for me to watch you seg yourself.
I hate what you've done with our segues.
You love it.
You know, it was fun at first. And now
it's serious business.
It's chafing.
Oh, that is a hell of a word to describe what's been happening.
Need some lubricant, friend.
See, now you're getting into the spirit.
I'll seg myself. So,
all right,
I have been making VR stuff. Like anybody who has been on our Discord, which you should join at the link in the description of this podcast. Anybody who's been on the Discord knows I'm making a Space Castle VR hangout space.
Yeah.
Which is fucking rad. And I've been wanting to make VR games forever, having made other types of games in the past, and VR being, frankly, the first time I've felt excited about the future of video games in, like, well over a decade. As such, I spend a lot of time watching VR tutorials on YouTube and, you know, just experimenting and exploring the space. As part of that, I found a YouTube channel with such a good fucking name that I'm frankly upset that I didn't think of it. A YouTube channel called A Fistful of Shrimp.
That's awesome.
Which is just such a good name for a channel, frankly. Fistful of Shrimp is one dude makes VR game tutorials as making a game dev. And on their website, I learned that they also recently moved up to Seattle. So I'm like, maybe we will cross paths sometime. We'll like hang out and make VR games together. That would be sick. But Fistful of Shrimp makes some of the clearest and simplest Unity VR game development tutorials. They're so good and such high quality stuff that like I've watched most of their videos multiple times just because they're great reference material. But also they pepper in some jokes sometimes that are surprisingly funny for just like little offhand remarks. And the way that they do their development is kind of the same way that I like to do my development. So like the tutorials kind of mesh really well with my style, which is great. I honestly wish that they had like 500 more videos than they do, just because like the dozen that they have is just not enough. But they're a young channel, so.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now and there's not a lot of videos, but like, dude, they have like a tutorial on how to create like wrist menus, like in-game.
And what's cool is like, it's a lot of this
continuous movement. That's a big deal. That's awesome.
A lot of VR games don't do it well, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, there's been several games I've tried playing where the movement just doesn't feel right and it just pulls me right out.
Yeah. And what's cool about Fistful of Shrimp is all of their tutorials are like not plugin based. So they rely on Unity's built-in XR interaction toolkit, which is like the Unity developed VR XR stuff. So there's no like third-party plugins. It's all like close to the foundation, which is really nice and really helpful. Even if, like me, you are going to end up using a few other plugins. Like I have discussed that I'm using a plugin called AutoHand to do a lot of the code-based grabbing and interaction stuff, just so I don't have to build that.
Yeah.
But what's cool about Fistful of Shrimp is their tutorials are built in a way that it's really easy to understand what's happening and why, so that you can build on top of it. I'm so fucking tired of YouTube tutorials that are just like, you want to do this thing? Here's the 10 steps that take 10 minutes for me to explain and you can do the thing. It's like, I don't actually care about that thing. I want to know why and how so that I can apply it to my own shit. Their tutorials are more education and less step.
That's fucking awesome.
They're not like, do these things to accomplish this goal. It's like, here's how to deal with this thing so that you can do it in your own way and apply it to your own shit. And it's excellent. And I wish that there was more channels like this one, just so that there was just more stuff to talk about.
That is a big problem as a graphic designer too, with like Adobe sort of tutorial videos where it's like, welcome to my tutorial. Here we're going to show you how to vectorize this photo in Photoshop and export it out to Illustrator so you can edit properly. It's like, okay, cool. Here's the 10 steps to do it. And thank you for watching this video. Click the like and ring the bell, blah, blah, blah. Tell me why I did that. So the logic applies for when I want to do something similar later. And I understand why I just use the tools the way I use them.
Exactly.
Because as anybody who's creative and anybody who's building something, you want to know why that tool was the right tool because you build a relationship with that tool.
Mm-hmm.
And you're able to go off on your own and realize and discover new ways of using that tool and learn shit on your own. And even come up with new methods and ways of doing things on your own, as opposed to just, that's why this is actually going to lead into today's listener question, believe it or not, because I have an issue with how graphic designers are taught and how they learn from textbooks. And no, nothing against anybody who has a degree. That's a massive fucking accomplishment. And you are probably more well-learned in the ways of graphic design than I am, but I have issues with the black and white sort of cookie cutter way that graphic designers learn how to do things. And there's no sense of personal discovery or personal growth or even personal style in how you achieve the goals you're trying to achieve because you're just being told how to do it.
Yep.
So good on fucking Fistful of Shrimp for doing the opposite approach.
Yeah.
And actually being a teacher and not just presenting the solution.
Fistful of Shrimp is also a dev after my own heart. Like, went to school for a thing, fucking didn't want to do that.
Yep.
Did want to make games, so they're just fucking figuring it out. They're just going to do it themselves. And that is, like, my whole life, is I'm just like, I want this thing to exist. So I'll just fucking figure it out. I'll just teach myself. I'll just do it myself. Fistful Shrimp is the same way. And it's like, man, it comes through in their tutorials, and which is probably why I gel so easily with them as a tutorial series, just because it's like, yeah, this is obviously the exact same way that I would do this.
Yeah.
So I'm thankful that I can just learn from this person instead of, like, spending the week to figure it out myself.
Right. Exactly.
It's great. It's exactly the kind of content that I wish there was more of, because it's exactly the kind of way that I like to do things and the way that I have ended up doing. Like, I got into game development because I was tired of, like, not seeing stuff that I wanted. So I just fucking figured out, I'm just going to do it myself. I'll just do it. I'll figure it out. I'll learn on the way. I'm capable of learning. I'll just do it. And that's exactly how they're doing stuff. And it's fucking great.
That's the way you should do it. That's fucking awesome. Fistful of Shrimp, I salute you.
Yes. I have subscribed on all three of my YouTube accounts, and that's the best I can do. So,
did you ring the bell?
Yes, I did. And until they get, like, a Patreon or something, I'm doing my best.
Nice.
Kind of goes back to my whole philosophy. It's like, there's lots of Unity tutorial channels and lots of big ones even, but I want to support the kind of content that I want to see more of. And Fistful of Shrimp is the kind of shit I want to see more of. So, like, I'm doing whatever I can to support them. Also make more tutorials, because I have more stuff that I want to learn about.
We have that aforementioned listener question. Are you ready for that?
Oh, yeah. Let's get into it, girl.
We got a question in from False Philosophy 12, separated by underscores. They sent that to us via our Gmail account. Seth, do you want to tell the people how they can reach us and ask their own questions before we get to it?
Oh, yeah. Bonesaw is ready.
yeah.
Well, if you happen to be the ghost of Macho Man Randy Savage playing in a Spider-Man film, you can hit us up at Space Castle Pod, which is our Twitter and our Instagram handle. You can also send us a long form email, like False Philosophy 12 did, at spacecastlepodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. We have a voicemail as well that I will frankly never remember the number for. So,
no, I've given up expecting you to.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Good. I'm glad we're on the same page.
Yeah, we've got that hotline. You can call or text anytime, day or night, and that number is 1-970-591-3577. We want to hear your wonderful voice. If you want to call us up and sing the theme song from Steven Universe, I'd love to hear that too.
Yeah, me too, actually. So you should do that. Or call. Actually, no, just call us up and sing us Cookie Cat.
Yeah, let's do that.
Cookie Cat's great.
Sing whatever the fuck you want to sing, or ask us whatever you want to ask us. And we'll put it in the show.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be Steven Universe related.
Yeah, absolutely. So this question we received from False Philosophy 12 is as follows. You have 15 minutes to prepare a TED Talk for 5,000 people. What is your topic?
Oh, no. Well, I actually only have about 10 minutes, because I'll have a 5-minute panic attack.
Right there on stage.
Yeah. So I've got 10 minutes to figure out a topic to talk to 5,000 people about. That's actually a really fun question. Do you have one loaded? Because I need to think about it.
I do have one loaded. It's loaded. I've pulled back the hammer. I can pull that trigger right now if you want.
Yeah, pull the trigger. Well,
here we go.
I don't like that.
No, that's not a really good metaphor for right now.
Yeah.
Or in this country ever, really.
Yeah, it's probably want to avoid that. Anyways, tell us the thing.
My TED Talk for 5,000 people would be that graphic designers are graphic designers. Developers and programmers are developers and programmers. Film editors and motion graphic designers are film editors and motion graphic designers. Stop fucking hiring one person to do all those fucking things and paying them less than a national average salary. Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
That's a good TED Talk. I like that a lot.
Not enough people understand that, oh, that guy works in Photoshop. He does the computer thing. He can do all the computer things. And it's kind of the point now where in my industry, a graphic designer is expected to do fucking everything. They're expected to know how to develop and program websites. They're expected to know how to code HTML and CSS. They're expected to know how to edit video and sound, on top of being able to like work expertly in Adobe, all the various programs. And it's not fucking right. Like, you can't go to school and just be like an expert on everything. You don't have a degree in all these things all at once. That costs way too much fucking money and time. But it's gotten to the point, like I said, where everybody has failed to understand and refuses to understand that professional creatives have a niche. They have a very specific skill set. And trying to force them into multiple boxes at the same time is going to result in rushed and inferior work because you're not paying the proper respect to those professionals who have taken the time to hone their craft over many, many years and get really fucking good at it. And you're just expecting them to just be this jack of all trades and just do whatever the fuck you want them to do. And in most cases, you're underpaying them for doing it. So stop doing that shit. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. We have 5,000 cookies and small glasses of orange juice in the lobby for each of you.
Dude, I can't tell you the number of times I have worked for a company that expects me to do like 6 or 7 full-time jobs.
Exactly.
It's fucking, I'm tired of it.
If you want really fucking good work, then you hire a graphic designer with experience with UI UX and you hire a really fucking good programmer. You get them a bunch of beers and stick them in a room together and they figure out that they're going to be good friends and how to work with each other. And they're going to build you the dopest fucking website you've ever seen. If you hire a graphic designer who spent 4 years on an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree at a university to be a graphic designer, and you ask them to build a website, you know what they're going to do? They're going to take twice as long because they're going to have to Google all that shit and figure out how to do it so they can keep their job. And it's probably not going to be that great. And you're probably going to end up with some legal problems because they're going to be stealing code from other developers at some point. And it's just a bad situation. And people just want things done fast and cheaply and as sloppily as possible. And if it works, it works. And that is so demoralizing and so degrading and so just defeating for anybody who works in a creative field.
That is why every dev I've ever met is completely burnt out. It's fucking rough, dude. I can't even tell you how exhausting it is to be a professional developer.
Yep.
For that exact reason, dude.
Graphic designer too, man.
Creatives in general are like, yeah, fucking exploited. And not like exploited as humans, like you might exploit child labor, Nestle, looking at you.
Yeah, sons of bitches.
Yeah, fuck Nestle. But also exploited in the way that's like, we're asking you to do 3 full-time jobs. We're expecting you to work 80 hours a week, but we're going to pay you like you work 40.
Yeah, we want you to be our senior graphic designer and our senior web developer, and we want you to maintain our server and also edit this video and basically run the front-facing aspects of our business, and we're going to pay you like an entry-level graphic designer fresh out of college.
Yeah, dude. I'm tired of that shit so much. Yeah, that's a good TED Talk. I'd listen to it. I mean, I listened to like the synopsis just now, and I'm on board. So develop it. We'll reach out to TEDx, and we'll get you on stage.
Shit will go viral because I'm going to throw shit and be angry. I'm going to use the F word a lot of times. I'm going to make some people cry.
As long as they're only CEOs, dude.
Yeah.
You could hire a graphic designer, hire a developer, sit them down in a room and have them make good shit. And then later they'll make a podcast called Space Castle.
Mm-hmm. And talk shit about you. And tell the world how fucking dumb you are.
This is basically how our podcast happened.
Exactly.
Okay. My TED Talk is less
inflammatory?
I don't know if it's less inflammatory, but it's definitely less frustrating.
All right.
My TED Talk is titled this. I want to see Keanu Reeves play the live-action version of Avatar Roku. This is my TED Talk. In this TED Talk, I will attempt to convince you to cast Keanu Reeves as Avatar Roku. Okay, you read the title. That's it. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
All right. Well played.
My actual talk would probably end up delving into Keanu Reeves should play a lot more things, but I don't have time to get into that. Actually, I do. Keanu should play way more things. he's a really good like character actor as long as you put him in the right types of characters.
Yes.
He's not like typecast types of characters, right? He's not that narrow, but his bandwidth is pretty narrow. You know, he's not going to be fucking a replacement for Abraham Lincoln. But would I watch a movie if he played Abraham Lincoln? Abso-fucking-lutely I would.
Yeah, I'd watch that shit. It probably wouldn't be good. I probably wouldn't enjoy it, but I would watch that shit just to see what happened.
I would definitely enjoy it. And it might be... Here's the thing, is like, if he plays the right kind of Lincoln, like, get the Rousseau brothers in there, it could be a really fucking good film. He's no Daniel Day-Lewis. That's the wrong kind of character. Wrong Lincoln. Yeah. Get Keanu to play a not like a Bill and Ted character every time, but like a Keanu type character, like one that works for him, and he can kill it. Like, that's why he's good in John Wick. That's why he's good in like Crazy Rich Asians.
Speed.
He does have a specific range, mm-hmm. but he's very good in that range.
I agree.
He's not just like the Bill and Ted or even Speed and Point Break. He's excellent in Point Break.
He is really good in Point Break.
Like, he's got some good characters. And what was it? My Own Private Idaho, mm-hmm. I believe. Fucking great. Keanu can play a really good character, and he needs to be in more movies, man. Like, straight up.
Just no more miscasting ever. Like Bram Stoker's Dracula. That was fucking awful.
Yeah, that was brutal.
That was bad.
That's the thing. He's very good in his range, but outside of his range, useless.
He would have been really good in an alternate universe Watchmen movie as Dr. Manhattan, because he's got that
dude
charming spaciness to him. You know what I mean? And I don't mean like Kevin Spacey, because fuck that son of a bitch.
Yeah, but fuck like, Kevin Spacey.
That otherworldly, like, he's got that sort of distance about him that would be fucking perfect as Dr. Manhattan.
He has like, he can play a level of detachment that would be perfect for Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, and he displays that even like Bill and Ted. Like,
yeah.
Ted's a compassionate, nice character, but he's detached. He's goofy and silly, and he's like the stoner without the drugs, and it's really endearing.
Yeah, Keanu can play the kind of person that's like, oh, time travel? Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm thoroughly convinced by your TED Talk. That was very enjoyable.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
You're welcome. You think if we asked Keanu Reeves to replace Alex on Space Castle, he'd do it?
Here's the thing. If we ever actually got the opportunity to legitimately ask him, yeah, I think he probably would.
He probably would.
The thing is, there's so many other layers in between us and him, we'd never actually get the opportunity. People would filter us out.
Only like the law and bodyguards and gated fences and shit. Like,
his agent would be like, dude, no, fuck off.
Have you ever met the average Hollywood agent? We can get through that shit real quick.
Yeah. Maybe.
No, it's the armed guards and the fences I'm more worried about.
No, I don't think that's a problem. Keanu doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would have like bodyguards that would prevent you from hanging out or talking to him. He seems like the kind of guy that would be like, oh, this is a business thing, talk to my agent, because he's the one who has to go through all of my business stuff.
Mm. So we'd be just like Alex Winter.
That might do it
for this episode of Space Castle. As always, it is your clubhouse now for all things nerdy. I want to thank our good friend Brian Levitt for co-writing our theme song, These Notes. We want to invite you to become part of our Galactonaut crew on patreon.com/spacecastlepod. As always, my name is DT.
And I'm Seth, Keanu's biggest fan. Well, that's not true.
Alex Winter is probably Keanu's biggest fan. We love you, Alex Winter. Your documentaries are fantastic.
That's a fact. Okay. Bye. Love you.